Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is now 8:08 here at WCCO, and that is the perfect song to introduce this segment because it does have a lot to do with what you're saying about yourself and so much more. If 2019 is the year that you wanted to build up your brand, how should you go about doing it? Strategist, speaker, and entrepreneur Dr. Simone Ahuja is CEO of Blood Orange, a consulting company that supports innovation and entrepreneurship from idea through execution. Dr. Ahuja co-authored the international bestseller, and I hope I'm saying this correctly, Jugad Innovation, and is out with a new book just this past week, Disrupt It Yourself, 8 Ways to Hack a Better Business Before the Competition Does. And it's all about the competition, isn't it? Dr. Simone, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and welcome.
My pleasure. It's great to be here. Thank you.
You know, so many people are looking at something else, whether it's a business on the side or even within the companies. A lot of companies, as you know, are really promoting from within. And so entrepreneurship is kind of the new word. Can you tell us exactly what that is?
Yeah. And actually, you bring up a great point, Nerlyn, this idea of people doing things on the side, whether it's a side hustle outside of their business or a side hustle inside of a larger business. Entrepreneurship is really what people do when they act more like entrepreneurs on the inside of big or at least very established companies. Right? And that's, so it's not a very easy thing to do because usually we're talking about, you know, organizations that are a little staid, a little traditional, hierarchical. So these entrepreneurs, they tend to stand out. And in my book, I call them DIYers. So these are the folks who are trying to disrupt it themselves.
So has it been difficult for them to really establish themselves as an entrepreneur and move up in the company where the company actually acknowledges it?
Good question. And I would say that that is changing. So if in years past, these were sort of the problem children of the organizations, the folks who are coloring out of the lines, and maybe they were pushed aside and they really had to be higher in the ranks to get to a place where they could make good progress. Today, organizations, especially large corporations, are starting to understand they really have to foster this kind of mindset and this kind of approach because things are moving too fast now. You can't have all the experts in your organization, but sometimes you've got folks in your organization who are connected to others, especially your end users or customers, thinking about what their problems are. And those are the folks then that are thinking a little bit differently about how they do things. So it's a great question you raise for a couple of reasons. One is it's changing. Organizations are starting to become more open to this idea and more formally fostering this kind of idea. And it's a big trend in the direction of big companies that need to innovate, right? We know that big companies are starting to fall off the S&P 500. It used to be they'd last on there for decades. Within 10 years, about 2027, that lifespan will be about 10 to 12 years. So entrepreneurship is a great way for them to do that.
It makes so much sense to me, particularly because we're seeing it's more difficult to become an entrepreneurship, to get all the papers in order to get anyone to invest in your business. It's become harder, particularly where we're at right now with our the financial industries and how they're reaching out to support individual businesses and entrepreneurs. So if you're in the midst of this and you choose to be an entrepreneur and you say to your company, is this something that you would go to them and say, look, this is who I am, and I want you to acknowledge that. How am I able to be that entrepreneur on the inside of this company? Do you ask those questions?
Well, that's the thing that I found so fascinating when I did my research over the last 3 years about entrepreneurs, who they are, what are their characteristics, how do they actually operate, And then what is the organization's response to them? And they don't necessarily ask. I think, you know, if I think about what are the traits of these entrepreneurs in organizations, I think of things like they're very action-oriented. You know, they're not waiting for people to tell them what to do. They're getting out there and they're doing it themselves without waiting for top-down commands, right? Mm-hmm. They act based on their connectedness to their end users, and they're problem solvers. They distill these problems down to their essence and they start attacking them because they see a real need. They have a real passion and purpose for them, and that fuels them and gives them the energy to move forward, even if it's really challenging. The other thing is, you know, they're really asset based. So, in other words, their mindset is that of what do I have already, not what I don't have. So, if you're thinking about, well, I have knowledge, I have a network, I have an ecosystem, rather than I need budget, I need headcount, I need supplies, then you're less inclined to ask for anything because you're just going to start to find a way forward. Now, what's interesting about that is the less you asking you do, the less fingerprints you have on what it is that you're doing, right? So as soon as you start to attach resources to something, in most large organizations, you get a lot of, well, let me give you my opinion about that, and that's not how we do it here. So this gives you a kind of freedom if you have that asset-based mindset. And the other thing is, you know, these entrepreneurs, they're really great at enlisting others into their process. I think the days of the lone wolf are a little bit over. I think entrepreneurs today really realize, well, I'm going to check out who else is out there. I'm going to check out, who else is seeing this problem, share the need with them, explain why it's relevant to them, and then bring them into my process so they know they don't have to do it alone. So I would say they don't start out necessarily asking for permission. I think they often get into action on their own. That gives them the ability to do a little experimentation, to gather a little bit of information and data, and to go forward with something saying, hey, here's some proof points. Here's what our customers, for example, are telling us before it can be completely shot down by, you know, business as usual management practices.
Right. Isn't that the truth? Now, we've got, what, 5 or 6 generations that are working together in a lot of these corporations. Are you seeing entrepreneurs in each of these generations, or is it really the last two, the youngest of those that are looking to be entrepreneurs?
So the traditional entrepreneurs have been around, you know, for generations, but not as many. Today, I think what we're seeing, so if I think about, you know, what's the big shift that's happening is a recent survey showed that only 14% of college grads want to work in big companies. A lot of them want to go to startups, or they want to start something on their own, or they want to work on a small purpose-driven companies. And the large organizations are starting to take note of this. And they're realizing that, okay, well, we really have to give people this place to create that exact space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the biggest things that corporations are realizing today is how do we give people that space? How do we make sure that, you know, we're supporting these entrepreneurs who are on the inside? So I would say you're right. It's mostly the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what's interesting is companies, though, are grappling with, okay, how do we actually support these folks? So if you're familiar with Dan Pink's work, he talks a lot about autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says, okay, you know, beyond a certain point, compensation only matters so much. After that, it's what do people feel like they can do on their own? Are they purpose-driven? Are they doing work that's really connected to how they feel or what they feel is important? And are they achieving some level of mastery? Well, that's really what a lot of the younger generation wants. Now it's on, I think, on the organizations and some of the mentors, some of the older generations then to support it. Now, I will say this, Geraldine, the folks who are most successful very often have a support network. And what I found is if I think about, you know, what's really different about managing in a way that supports entrepreneurship, it almost flies in the face of traditional management practices, where instead of thinking about, well, how do I keep people on the rails? How do I keep them doing business as usual? You know, their work that's very top down. It's more about today, how do I create space for them? Okay. How do I facilitate what it is they're trying to do, without you know, tamping them down too much.
Right. And continue that space as well. You have to keep giving that space.
Correct.
You know, they need to grow within that space. And that has to be a challenge, because this is pretty new to corporations.
It's pretty new to corporations. And I think that's what's so interesting about the way that entrepreneurs can brand themselves, because they can brand themselves as individuals who are really valuable in the organization. You know, one of the titles or one of the subtitles in my book is called Navy SEALs, Not Pirates. And what that means is, yeah, you're kind of bucking the system in a way, but you're not doing it for no reason. You're not doing it just for your own good. You're doing it for the greater good. And that's what the corporations have to figure out, how to do, both in terms of management, both in terms of also in terms of how do you reward this behavior, how do you model this behavior. And that's kind of what I map out in my book, Disrupt It Yourself.
You know, isn't this a possibility for, well, it could actually change the way corporations do business, that entrepreneurs could affect that. You're now not only going forward and saying, hey, this is who I am, this is what I have to offer, and I am branding myself within this. Do they take that? Will we see more people leave the corporations once those brands are out there and the company is really building it and giving them the space to be that entrepreneur? Are they going to start losing people? How do we know that they're going to stick and stay?
That's a great question. So there are a couple of things that I've noticed. So one is the more corporations start to support this kind of behavior, and especially among, you know, Gen Z, I mean, especially the newer generations, they socialize a lot of information. So if you start hearing, hey, Corporation X, I did this because I decided that this was important and I was supported in this way. And guess what? I was actually able to execute on this. That is going to draw others to the organization. That is a huge, huge part. So I think that risk is when the organizations don't support the entrepreneurs. And I outline a couple examples of this in Disrupt It Yourself, where these entrepreneurs who identified a real need that's out there, that's still parallel to the strategy of the company. The company doesn't understand how it's going to work, or, you know, the business model doesn't quite make sense to them, or they feel like it might cannibalize some of their other products. Well, you know, what happens in the case where those entrepreneurs don't get supported is they go out, they leave. Those are the ones who leave. So the organizations who understand how to support the entrepreneurs, the ones who really give them that space, that really give them that kind of air cover they need to explore, those are the corporations that are going to win.
When you talk about how important entrepreneurship is to these corporations and building this within the company so that it can stay and work for a long time, you talk about the ways that entrepreneurship supports the human side of disruption by engaging passion and purpose and increasing engagement. I love that piece is included, because sometimes I think corporations lose sight of that.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. And I think it's so interesting, Geralyn, that you say that, because, you know, my first book, Jugaad Innovation, I had this, but that book was all about, you know, how do you deliver high value at very low cost? And, you know, we emerged with six principles of innovation, you know, keeping it simple, including marginal communities, et cetera. And the last one was follow your heart. And what that meant was a lot of the entrepreneurs, and, you know, some of these were very grassroots folks that had very little money or education solving big problems. We noticed it was because they were so closely connected to a problem, you know, that, like, you know, an illness maybe that their child had, or a problem that they faced because they didn't have electricity where they lived, that it was their passion and their purpose that allowed them to solve big problems, even though they didn't have a ton of resources or a ton of free time or much of anything, really, formal education. And now, you know, 3 years into the research of this book and with the emergence of Disrupt It Yourself, that passion and purpose piece, that principle about engaging passion and purpose, I put it front and center, whereas before I used to say it almost under my breath because it felt too soft. It felt like something people couldn't sink their teeth into. Now I understand that, you know, if we look at some of the best innovations out there, they are done by the people who feel really connected to what they're doing. They feel really like there's some deep meaning behind it. And if large organizations don't support the humans. And I think that's right. What you said is right. You know, we sometimes we lose the conversation about who are the people mm-hmm. helping to solve these problems and what are their needs? How can we support them to give them energy? Now, we don't want to take advantage of them either, because we also see examples where sometimes people are so passionate, you know, they're doing kind of a side hustle in the industry, in their workplace. And it's kind of exhausting. We don't want to take advantage of it either. We want to make sure it's nurtured, it's rewarded, it's supported. But that is how, and that's how, you know, when people, everybody's talking about cultural transformation and, you know, how do I shift my culture? Very difficult in big organizations. But when you start addressing the human side of innovation, problem solving, and business, that's when I think the tables really can start to turn. And that's what's going to really lead to sustainable growth for a lot of the companies out there that are facing, you know, almost, you know, ready to almost get wiped out because there's so many small and nimble startups out there yeah. that could threaten them.
Well, it's really great news that entrepreneurship is something that corporations are really interested in harnessing. But at the same time, some of these young people feel like they're harvesting it, that they're taking it from them, that they're going to take what they know and what they want to do and what they can give to the company and not be able to really nurture it and move it forward. Is that going to be a challenge as we look forward to the next few decades? Because this is something that could really be the next thing for those that really want to feel as though they are really relevant, but they still have their own, they have their own piece of the business that is being nurtured within the corporations.
Yeah, I mean, I think that will be a problem if we don't figure out how to drive entrepreneurship, if we don't figure out how to address the human side of problem solving and innovation, that is going to be a problem for these large businesses. The risk is always that these entrepreneurs then can, and actually that's how many entrepreneurs have operated. They have a solution that they came up with based on a real problem that they see. They think their organization should address it. The organization doesn't create space for that, or simply doesn't know how, or doesn't really see the connection point. The entrepreneur leaves and then goes off and starts their own business, and very often successfully. And I share an example in my book of one person in healthcare who was looking at medical devices based on diabetes care, where a person left the company. Then he went off and started his own organization that's starting to gain some really, really quite good successes. And that same company then is now trying to compete with the entrepreneur who left. And not only that, but now starting to realize that, you know what, these smaller and more nimble organizations, those are our competition too. It's not just the big players that we're used to competing against. And these small players, they can move quickly. They can move with speed. They don't have as much hierarchy. They don't have as much process. They don't have as much history that keeps them held back. The larger organizations are going to have to really start thinking about not only how do they address the needs of the individuals, but how do they structure themselves differently? So you can have, for example, self-forming teams that are based on, you know, solving a problem rather than based on title or pyramid, for example.
Well, I tell you, it's not going to be easy to move these huge boats, you know, in the right direction. But I am really excited about the possibilities. If people want to pick up your book, Disrupt It Yourself, 8 Ways to Hack a Better Business Before the Competition Does, where can they find it? Everywhere?
They can find it everywhere books are sold. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, 800 CEO Read. They can also go to disruptityourselfbook.com if they want to order from there and then enter their information. They can get free access for about 1 or 2 months to my new e-course. So if they're interested in some free content in addition to the book, they can get there as well.
I tell you, you are a brilliant woman. I am absolutely honored to interview you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate
it. Thank you. It's been an honor to talk with you.
All right. That is Dr. Simone Ahuja. Dr. Simone Ahuja, who is CEO of Blood Orange. If you want more information about Blood Orange, you just go to blood-orange.com. Blood-orange.com. It's been a pleasure. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. It is now 8:27 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steel Talking, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. You know, as we talk about this entrepreneurship, there's a lot to it. There really is a lot to it. And I know that corporations are trying to to seduce and support a lot of these young generations to try to keep them in their business. I tell you, it's been a mess that, you know, many of them have left jobs because they don't feel supported. They don't feel like their brain is valued. Their brain trust is valued. And yes, a lot of these young people, some people think that our young people are lost. They are not. Mm-hmm. Engage in conversations with them. Find mm-hmm. out what they know, what they're studying. You know, this is the generation that is going to school with all types of people from all over the world. They are truly global citizens having to communicate with those where English is a second language. And they are doing it. They are working together, building things together, going to school, getting their education, and more. Some of them are out being apprentices whether they're electricians, they're learning to be electricians, they're learning so many crafts. And so don't feel like we've lost them. We have not. Get out, meet them, talk to them. If you see them on a train and they've got their headphones on, if they ever take them off, start a conversation. Seriously, because I think you'll be really surprised at what young people are doing. I love this one segment that they do on television with Ari Melber on MSNBC, and he's so into rap. This really surprised me, Shaletta, because he brings in someone that is a lawyer who was part of the Nixon the Nixon mess with, what is it called?
Watergate.
Thank you, honey. When they'll bring someone that was on that team, and then they'll juxtapose that with a rapper, you know, a brand new rapper, somebody that's up and coming, and they talk about politics. They talk about what is going on in the world. And so many of us will be shocked to hear when these two converse and how beautiful it is that they understand each other's language, that they both have something valuable to say, that they are engaged in the political game themselves, that they are using their voice to vote. So don't get discouraged with these young people. So as you hear us talk about these entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs and what that means to some of these corporations, go, oh, no, no, no. I'm not going to let somebody eat up my brain trust and then I never get any further. We have to work hard to make sure that these young people have an opportunity to move forward. So as you heard Dr. Simone say just a moment ago, they're making a way. They're opening up the highway up for these young people. Let's just hope we actually see it. And let's just hope that those that are used to the old model, that they will be trained in knowing how to deal with young people who have vast interest, and they are the global citizens, and we have to make sure we look at them as global citizens. All right. I'm sorry I got on my little soapbox, but there you go. We're going to take a break and come back and do some weather in just a moment. It is 8:34 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You're listening to Steel Talking. I am your host, Geraldine Steele. Keep that up for me, Shaletta. My nephew wrote this, by the way. I love this intro to this segment. It's called So What Do You Do? Where we get a chance to kind of go out there and look in the communities and find out something we don't know much about or nothing about, really. And I tell you, we come up with some interesting ones, that is for sure. Well, joining me in studio tonight is a woman that I don't think I have ever met. You have ever met you, Tracy?
You haven't met me, but I met you and your family.
No kidding?
Mm-hmm.
Where was that? Do you remember?
At the Old Guthrie.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, way, way,
Over
way
by
back.
The Walker? No
yes,
kidding.
Yes, a Christmas concert that I will never forget.
No kidding.
It was absolutely amazing.
Wow, thank you so much for supporting us. You are, first of all, very tall and beautiful, and I'm
thank
excited
you.
To hear about what you do. For this segment, Dr. Tracine Asbury is in studio with me. She's executive director of something called the St. Paul Youth Services, which for 45 years has worked with St. Paul Youth in Schools. I have never heard of this organization. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we're a well-kept secret, mm-hmm. and we're working on changing that. Like you said, we've been around for 45 years, and our legacy is innovation. We started 45 years ago with an alternative to the juvenile justice system, and then we developed another program that was a behavior intervention program in schools. And just the summer of 2017, we started a program that's called Youth Power that actually pulls kids from our pre-charge diversion, which is an alternative to juvenile justice, our behavior intervention program, which is an alternative that works with youth in our schools to help them increase their progress in academics, attendance, mm-hmm. and behavior, which also cuts down on suspensions. And we have those youth apply for Youth Power, which is a paid at a livable wage leadership institute, so that it's about kids changing systems versus systems changing kids.
Thank God we have half an hour with you, because you really mentioned so many things that I'm interested in hearing more about. First of all, pre-charge diversion program. What
yes.
is that?
So pre-charge diversion is through our Ramsey County Attorney's Office, as well as the City of St. Paul Police Department. And this, again, is an alternative to the juvenile justice system. So our youth will make mistakes, sometimes second and third mistakes, and they need second and third chances, right? And so what pre-charge diversion does is it gives them the option, rather than having something on their record, they can have community service. They can have restorative practices. They can have restitution. Them and their families work with our counselors so that they can actually flip things around. And so that's an alternative. That's how we really started. That's the kind of the foundation of our legacy right there, an alternative to juvenile justice system.
Well, my goodness, that was the foundation, but you've really built on that.
Absolutely. And, you know, the biggest thing is that in order for us to have a legacy of innovation, we have to really be aware of what's happening in the world today. So our young people, my 21-year-old, 18-year-old, 7-year-old, they don't have the lives that we had when we were that age.
Right.
And
right.
so in order for us to stay relevant, we really have to listen to our young people. And we have to listen to them and to hear what things that they need so that they can learn to make better choices, so that they can teach us to make better decisions, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've stayed relevant. So from the pre-charge diversion to the behavior intervention, those were reactive modes to what was going on in the community. But youth power is something different. Youth power is St. Paul Youth Services listening to our young people in our pre-charge diversion, listening to our young people in our behavior intervention program, and them saying what type of program that they would want to be a part of.
Okay. My producer tells me that it has successfully interrupted your, you have successfully interrupted the cradle to prison pipeline.
Absolutely.
You
absolutely.
Know, where they've been even building our high schools to look like, you know, a prison. And so
true,
to know
true.
That that's being interrupted, how has the community reacted to this?
True. So, well, first I want to say thank you for your producer. I love your producer for saying that we have successfully interrupted the cradle to prison pipeline. But what we're doing right now is working with Black youth in our Youth Power program to dismantle it. And I don't want to make I want to make sure that I say that really clearly, that we're working with youth to dismantle that. Now, going back to your question when you said about St. Paul Youth Services and what we do and how we've been around and how we're responding to the community. Well, what we're doing right now is we have our big event that's coming up that actually kind of culminates our commitment to the community and allowing the community to give generously to support what we do. So when we grew out of the partnership with the City of St. Paul and the St. Paul Police Department, that was government funding, which we still have, which we still need because we're receiving referrals from these agencies. But what we're also doing is we're expanding that. We're allowing individuals and the community to give to our organization so that we have funds that can go into things like youth power. They're unrestricted. It. They allow us to do creative and innovative things that the community would actually get behind. And the event that we have, Yes We Can, which is a play because play on words because we're at Can Wonderland, is next Sunday, February 10th from 4 to 6 at Can Wonderland. And this is an opportunity for the community to come with us, to join with us on February 10th at that facility to see our kids in action, other youth in action, to really see how youth that some folks say are making poor choices, when they're given the opportunity to reimagine the possibilities, you'll see the amazing things that they'll do.
It takes a village. And so in knowing that these children may make better decisions, you also need to have people involved in the St. Paul Youth Services to kind of follow them along, because they're going to need that encouragement along the way. You don't just encourage them once and they're doing great and you send them on their way. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons why Youth Power was developed is because when I started at St. Paul Youth Services about 4 years ago, just over 4 years ago now, the first thing that I realized is that the only reason we had connection with young people is because they were getting into trouble. Mm. And in that situation, that means that kids are required to get into trouble in order for us to justify our existence. So Youth Power, and this again was a partnership between St. Paul Youth Services and our young people that we were already working with, is an opportunity for us to say we are not just around when kids are getting into trouble. which we all did, right? But nowadays, the consequences are so severe. They're much, much worse. But what we do is we give kids an opportunity to use all that energy to change systems. And so we've had young people that have spoken at the St. Paul Public School Board of Education. We've had young people speak at St. Paul City Hall. They have conducted a forum on the curfew ordinance. They've conducted a forum for the new St. Paul police chief a couple years ago.
So they are lobbying for their success.
Absolutely. And these are young kids that have to fill out an application. They have to talk about what their community means to them. They have to talk about what they would do to change things. And I really want to emphasize, these are the same kids that were in our pre-charge diversion program, the same kids that were in our behavior intervention program that are now kids changing systems versus systems changing kids.
And how long have you been doing this?
The Youth Power Program started in June 2017. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took us some time to get to the place to shift. But we really required a board, we required staff and leadership that really had a different lens on what when we thought about youth redirection. And we call it rewriting the rules of youth intervention. And we also talk about reimagining the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. How do you reimagine when they've taken away so much money from communities that really need other services for these young people? We need to keep them busy. There's not a whole lot to keep them busy. And then on top of that, you know that these young people are watching and reading the news. A lot mm-hmm. of people think that they're not, but they're staying mm-hmm. engaged. And when they hear about someone who goes to jail for 13 days, mm. 13 days because they lied to Mueller, you know, for the investigation mm-hmm. or something like that. Can you imagine what they feel like when you see some of these children in juvie for something far less than that? And they right. get to stay in juvie for a long time. And eventually some of them even move into some of the prisons. So mm-hmm. it's got to be disheartening when you hear their concerns, when they're watching with one people are saying one thing, but they're doing something else. How do right. you deal with that?
Right. Well, I think the biggest thing is that it is important to hear their fears. It's important to hear families' fears, parents' fears. I have fears. Like I said, I have three children, and so I think about that. And I think that fear, it's important to have that kind of downside so that you can also reimagine the possibilities. Now, one of my sheroes is Angela Davis, and she talks about that all the time. We have to see reality, and we have to believe that reality can be different. Right.
There are a lot of Angela Davises.
Angela Y. Davis. Okay. How about that? She was just here. I got another selfie with her. I was just sorry. I had to get that plug
in.
Did
you put it on social media?
Did I put it on it? Did I?
Right,
did I blow
right,
it up?
Right. Right. I can understand why.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But I think that's one of the things is that I think sometimes we get so bogged down with the problem, feeling defeated and all those things. But I would say, I would really venture to say that if that is the case, then you may not have any skin in the game. Mm-hmm. Because when you do have skin in the game, when you feel a connection to our Black youth and our youth of color and our Indigenous youth, there's a fire that comes to say we have to find solutions. And the issue is that as an adults, we've been in positions of power. We've been in positions of decision making and things are still the way that they are. So at St. Paul Youth Services, what we do is we partner with young people. Right. So in if you do that, if you're ever around young people, that gives you the energy and the creativity. And we do have some young people that do feel disheartened. And that's the truth. But our job as adults is to pull back and to remember why we're still here. And I rely a lot on my ancestors. I read a lot of bell hooks. I read a lot of Angela Y. Davis. Mm-hmm. I make sure that I'm conscious of what I put into my mind, into my heart, because that does determine if I feel defeated or if I feel renewed.
Yeah, it matters how you show up at work every day.
Absolutely.
I mean, it absolutely matters. At the same time, you know, I wish that there was this partnership between SPYS, which is for St. Paul Youth Services, and the teachers that are teaching mm-hmm. the history, teaching the civic classes, mm-hmm. Teaching them about who they really are and who they can be. They can still be that. You know, because like you said, once they get to this point, you know, they're already mm-hmm. in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there an outreach now to go and find the children that are on the precipice? You know, they're mm-hmm. they're right there. They're thinking about doing something they shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And then here you are. They find out about you and they come in and say, what can I do to be better?
Right. Well, a couple things. So our behavior intervention program is in schools. And so we do have specialists that partner with our principals, that partner with our teachers and staff. Mm-hmm. Because the first thing that we realize, and this is in Youth Power, and this is what the young people said they wanted, is that we start with healing and identity. So I talked about the kids going to the city of St. Paul, you know, City Hall, and to the school board meetings. But before we do any of that, the foundation is healing and identity. And it's recognizing, as you had mentioned, the narratives that we're bombarded with. I mean, you think about a black young person and the narratives that come at them, the visuals and the messages that they hear, right? Youth of color, our indigenous youth. You think about all those things. We have to first let kids know that that is not the definition of who they are, mm-hmm. right?
So tomorrow you will arrive, right, at the St. Paul Youth Services.
Yes.
And you're going to have to deal with this whole blackface situation, right? Mm-hmm. Where do you begin?
Mm-hmm. I would say that, first of all, we always open up a dialogue, right, to ask kids, first of all, have they seen the news? Are they aware of this?
And are they aware of what blackface is?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because a lot of the history that's in us, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s and up, some of that history is not in our kids.
Right.
Our kids are the kids, external kids, even my kids at my home. And so I want to be careful that we don't put on our pain onto kids, but we actually see, I want to see where they are, hear where they are. And I have staff, I have an amazing staff that really is really skilled, and they have relationships with kids already before these situations happen. And that's the key. Relationships, relationships, relationships. Mm-hmm. So that when you have those conversations about blackface, or you have those conversations about something that happened to them that they can't really name or articulate, but they can feel it in their bones, right? Mm-hmm. That they can feel safe enough that as it comes up, that we can talk about it. And I think that that's really important. And I think it's also important to talk about blackface, but also talk about black liberation. Right. Mm-hmm. So we have to find out ways to say this is what's happening. This is the history behind it. But then also talk about our liberation, not just from that, but our liberation as a people.
You know, I'm stuck on the whole comment you made about I don't want them to have to take on our pain. We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a break.
Oh, great.
And we're going to come back with my guest, Dr. Tracine Asbury. We'll be back in a moment. Yes, I am a pop queen. I love this song. It is now 8:50 here at WCCO. We are talking about St. Paul Youth Services, something I had never heard of. And this is a segment we call So What Do You Do? And in studio with me is Tracine Asbury. And she is the executive director of the St. Paul Youth Services. And they've been around 45 years working with the St. Paul Youth in schools, the juvenile justice system, and the community. And as she and I are talking about, it's not about interrupting the whole cradle to prison. It really is about dismantling it. She made that very mm-hmm. clear. But she also talked about, before we went to break, about you don't want them to take on our pain.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more.
I'm glad that you stopped me and that resonated with you. I think that oftentimes we want our experiences to be communicated and also to be felt and to be understood, which is great. I think that that's an important thing about connection. But when kids are growing up, when they're developing and figuring out their world, their place in their race, their place in their gender, their sexual orientation, they deserve to have the fluidity, the openness to explore themselves and to understand. And so I learned not having kids take on my pain from my oldest daughter, Domenica. One day I was telling her like it is.
And where we've been and where we're going?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what something meant mm-hmm. for her. Not for me, but for her. And she stopped me because I raised her that way. And she said, Mommy, I'm black, but I'm not black like you. Mm. And what she meant by that was that she was just growing up. She didn't have, at the time, I think I may have been 40, 45, something like that. And she didn't have all those years, right? All of those experiences. So in one way, as a teenager, she was probably saying, let me just try trial and error. But I heard her when she was saying she wanted to learn for herself. Now, granted, right now she's reading Bell Hooks' Sisters of the Yam, mm-hmm. and she did learn some hard lessons. But I think, though, we do want our kids to be able to be open, right? To be open and not to be closed and to be afraid and to be wise, but not to be closed and afraid. and
withdrawn. Right, I don't want them to be closed and afraid. I completely agree with that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you and I both know that the written word is like the most important as far as what they are going to learn, the lessons in life and in school. Mm-hmm. So those books that they put before them, maybe when you were growing up, I know for me as a baby boomer, let me tell you something. When we were in school and it was a chocolate city where I grew up, you learned all about the Black experience.
True.
And you knew all about slavery. You knew what the civil rights movement was about from beginning to end, right? Mm-hmm. I had a niece that's now 21 years old, and I'll never forget, I was looking at her book. It wasn't a civics class. I think it was an English class where they were addressing this. And there were blue and pink blocked out sections of a page.
Okay.
Right? They would only read what's in that little paragraph to explain all of that history and maybe a little bit more.
Gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
And so that's the concern. So when you say taking on the paint, I understand exactly what you're saying, because they're that generation that has not had to deal with a major movement, a revolution, right? It's now, just now with the whole women's movement and the Parkland High School students, they're fighting now. They have something to really stand up for. Mm-hmm. So I get it. But at the same time, girl, I'm trying to pour every bit of that pain into mine, who are now both really grown. So I find it really interesting that she was able to articulate, hey, this is yours. This was your war. This was your fight.
Right.
I have something else to deal with.
Well, I want to be clear, though. There's a difference between knowing the history and then what I was doing was expecting my child to feel what I was feeling about a situation. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Now, she has the history. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I'm the last of eight kids. My parents are from America's Georgia. My dad and mom moved up to Detroit when Henry Ford opened the first plant.
Oh, wow.
So we have a lot of history.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not what was being exchanged at that moment.
That's right.
It was my pain I was giving her.
That's right.
And so I'm glad that I raised a child that knew to stop me, to honor my pain, but to actually say that she was not required to feel it too.
And has that been a challenge for you at the St. Paul Youth Services, knowing that you have to set aside your pain so that these students don't take it on? They have their own pain, right? They have their own stuff to deal with. So do you find it difficult to set it aside?
Well, I think that I have a practice, kind of a morning ritual, even a ritual that I took before I came to see you, which I'm glad y'all don't notice, but I was telling Geraldine I had to be ready. You got to stay ready with her. You got to stay ready. So I had time before I came. I had some reading to get my mind right. And I think that one of the things that whenever you work with young people, right, I was a teacher for 10 years in Minneapolis Public Schools.
Oh,
I did it then
you.
As well.
What did you teach?
English language arts, middle school. I love middle school, sixth, seventh, eighth. But I had to spend time to take care of myself. I had, some people call it a morning ritual, a devotion, whatever you want to call it.
A mantra.
There you go.
Yeah.
We have to take time to do that when we're working with kids. And it's not just so we don't give them our pain. We don't want to work out our stuff on our young people.
Because they're trying to work out their stuff.
Exactly.
With
and they only get one childhood. And we need to honor that.
Wow, incredible. If there was one thing you wanted people to know about the St. Paul Youth Services that we don't know, what would it be?
I would say that the biggest thing about us and the reason why we're still here is that legacy of innovation. I just can't say it enough. I think that we have to continually reimagine and rewrite the rules of youth engagement. Sometimes we're still doing the same things we've been doing for 45 years, and we're getting no results or worse results, and we're sitting there wondering why, or we don't care because we're still getting funded. But at St. Paul Youth Services, the reason why I can feel confident to say to come to our Yes We Can event next Sunday, the reason why I can say come see what we're doing, apply for our jobs, is because we really are who we say we are. We have values. We are ready to change. We are ready to do better. I am looking at the implementation all the time, making sure we deliver for our kids. But we can't do any of that without the community. Mm-hmm. We need our community. We need the parents of our young people. We need all of us, as many people as possible, to wrap our arms around our young people.
Final question. With you having to do what you do within the parameters of high technology, social media, that sort of thing, has it been a challenge for you?
You know, I have young people in my house who have really helped me as I have grown into adulthood, really helped me kind of stay current. Stay relevant, if you will, and really call me on my stuff.
yet it is ever changing.
Yes.
You know, just because Facebook was out there and then all the parents
Girl,
got
kids
hip,
aren't on Facebook.
Are, no, okay, exactly. They'd have moved on to two, three, four different ones,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Change their profile and everything.
Absolutely.
So
and
how do you stay on top of that? You really depend on your children to help you get there.
Well, and also the kids that we work with. The funny thing about it is people always think kids are running from us.
Yeah.
They're not running from us. They're not running from the love.
Right.
If you notice,
yeah.
when you're ever around young people, they will come for the love.
They will.
They can sense genuine love. That's one of the reasons why I love middle school, because you can't fake it with middle school kids.
Even
they
though
are
they
real.
Smell themselves and think they are just grown, honey.
At 9 o'clock, they do.
Right. And say that on, if you're going to say it so people can hear it. Good Lord.
I got a middle schooler. You said if they smell themselves. I said sometimes they just plain old smell.
It's so true.
Yeah.
We have to end it here. And
okay.
I'm so sorry
no problem.
We've run out of time. But Tracine, I really hope that you will come back.
I would love
and
to
visit
come back.
With us again.
Yes. Thank you so much. You've been a joy.
And what if people want more information?
Where Absolutely.
Do they go?
You can find us on the website mm-hmm. at spys, spys.org. And I would love it if you come to Yes, We Can at Can Can Wonderland next Sunday, February 10th.
Excellent. We'll be back in just a moment.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.